Alrighty.
I guess I'll
Wow,
make
this
it.
is number three for me. I know I'm on a roll. I'm on a roll today. I got Club SBC after this, where I'm actually DJing. You might have seen some of the promos for that. That happens to be me. I'd like to welcome everybody to part number two of the Introduction to Cloud App Model for Office and SharePoint 2013. I've already introduced myself, but for who those who have not don't know me, I'm the product manager for the developer audience for both Office and SharePoint. Sitting next to me is Yi-Rei Chow, who's one of our fantastic senior program manager leads, and he knows this app model pretty much inside and out because it was his core things that he concentrated on with this version. So again, we're going to be a lot more deeper into this, and it's pretty much if unless you have any Office demos. Do you have any Office demos?
I have no Office demo.
This will
I opened an Office document once.
We open up an Office document once. You will not see any more Office at all with these sessions. Now, hey, that's wait. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because the whole point of this is that yes, this is a SharePoint conference, but we want to get into your heads that Office is right there with SharePoint now. So from a developer's perspective, there's a lot of similarities. We don't want them to be treated as separate, because they have been treated as separate before in the past. So now it's one big area, one big thing of love between both Office and SharePoint. So with that, let's go ahead and jump in. We'll go into our agenda. We're going to talk a little bit about the app hosting options. Rolando had talked a little bit earlier, but I'll go into a little more details. We'll talk a little bit about the REST and CSAM APIs. And then lastly, we'll finish up with remote event receivers. So with that, with the app hosting options, there's generally three different types of architecture approaches. Now, we talked about them before, but we'll go in a little more depth. So first is the SharePoint-hosted app, which is something I demonstrated in the last session about, and also when you create apps for SharePoint using Napa, those are also SharePoint-hosted apps. The big thing to note is that app is created into a separate app web that is basically kind of underneath and connected to the parent web. And this is to ensure that the app itself is related, excuse me, not related, is isolated from the parent web. And this prohibits like cross-site scripting attacks and the like. You can reuse web elements that are out of the box, like out of the box web parts, like I demonstrated, where I use the list view web part, and you can use custom actions, lists. You can define all that great stuff. Key thing to remember is no server codes allowed, but that's okay because we live in a services world, and there are ways to actually access services. Because you're thinking, well, you know, if it's coming from this app web, how do I deal with like communicating with, let's say, Twitter or Facebook or some other service that's outside of my app? Well, we actually provide mechanisms where you can actually proxy through SharePoint, and you define those proxies within your app manifest itself. So you define the URL for the app proxy. It looks very similar to a jQuery type of call for when you make like a REST endpoint call, and it just goes ahead and routes it automatically to the service, and then routes it back through SharePoint. So we thought about it, and we have that there as well. Now, we have these cloud-based apps, and these are the other two types that we have talked about, which is provider-hosted and auto-hosted apps. And we consider these call them cloud-based apps because they have code that executes outside of SharePoint. And they can execute either in the cloud with Office, you know, with Windows Azure, or if you want to use Amazon Web Services, or whatever platform that you're most comfortable with. Or you can run them on-prem with whatever platform infrastructure that you want to use. Key thing I want you to note is that the things that you can create with the SharePoint-hosted app all apply to the cloud-hosted app. So those artifacts that you created there can be easily plugged into cloud-based apps. And obviously, we saw with the Scott Guthrie keynote and what you'll see in a little bit was auto-hosted apps. So that's where we basically take care of the deployment for you. With Office 365, we give you a certain amount of kind of a private Azure tenancy, and we go ahead and deploy the bits automatically for you. So if you have code going into a website, we deploy that for you automatically. If you have SQL scripts. If you have a SQL, like a SQL database that you're creating, we deploy that for you as well. So it's a complete picture with the auto-hosted app. So just choosing between, how do you pick between a cloud host app and a SharePoint host app? How do you compare those, and how do you know which one you want to actually build? Obviously, there's a lot less moving parts with the SharePoint hosted app. You're just hosting an HTML page. It's a little bit easier to manage. But being able to have server-side code to respond to your specific web page, that's actually, you know, can provide a, you know, basically the world's your oyster in what you want to do. So those are kind of the differences that you have to deal with. So kind of the top here is the cloud hosted app is probably for most type of apps that we're going to do, because most of us don't do relatively simple type of apps. We do things that are more complex. While the proxy is there, ideally, you know, we want to keep things as simple as possible. So the cloud host app is probably the preferred model. SharePoint apps are really good for more smaller type of finite type of apps and type of solutions, things that are relatively small. A good type of scenario for like a SharePoint app is maybe if I'm creating a custom form that I'm creating, and I just want to give it a specific type of UI. Typically, I would, you know, go create a custom ASPX page, and I'll go push that up into SharePoint and whatnot, or I'll use something like InfoPath. But it's really easy just for me to use CSOM, JavaScript, package up as an app, and that way people can go ahead and leverage that that form whenever they would like. So again, with cloud hosted apps, you got the full power of the web, as I mentioned. You may have to deal with your own hosting. If you're not using auto-hosted, you have to figure that out. And you also have to deal with multi-tenancy. So if you're building a provider host app, let's say if you're an ISV where you have many customers that you're dealing with, and you want to keep your customers isolated, like you don't want Coca-Cola and Pepsi, you know, seeing each other's data, you have to worry about that multi-tenancy and code for that yourself. So that's some of the burden that comes with building cloud-type apps. Now with SharePoint host apps, you don't have to worry about multi-tenancy because your code is within the actual SharePoint site itself that you installed it to. So it's automatically isolated. It's hosted in SharePoint automatically, so you already know what it's. You already have the place to actually go ahead and host it. So let's go ahead and take a look. I have a cloud-hosted MVC that I have created, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to. Now we've been having some network issues here. I'm sure if many of you have saw a struggle in this session, probably other sessions. So I've actually went ahead and deployed this thing already. I'm not going to be hitting F5, or actually I wanted to write this thing live. I was all ready to write it live. I was kind of psyched, but I don't want to go through that F5 deployment because it's just taking too long right now. So I went ahead and deployed it already a little bit earlier, and we're actually going to look at a completed solution, and I'm going to step through the code to see how it's made. The key thing I want to point out about this app is that this is not a web page app. This is an MVC app, which is something, as a SharePoint developer, is something that we're typically not too used to, because SharePoint really hasn't done MVC very well very well in the past. Let me see here. Did I click on it? There we go. So this app is simply just reading a list. It's kind of, if you notice, it's kind of similar to what the keynote was. The key thing that I simply added at the very bottom here is I added the ability to go ahead and add entries via the using the client-side object model. So I'll just go ahead and insert those. We'll see that it all works. We click add. And assuming I didn't do anything wrong or there isn't any gremlins I'm not aware of, it'll eventually go ahead and post. And you can see the lower entry there where it says parking world received, which I just entered. So this is a simple MVC app. You can use the MVC API type of web API capabilities with MVC 4, so you can do more of that kind of that web.2.0 type of look and feel where the page doesn't refresh. I just kept it simple for this demo. So let's go ahead and take a look to see what actually it took to actually build this app. And we'll go ahead and start with the controller itself. So with this with the controller, I basically took the index itself and I went ahead and queried the actual, I'm just going to close that. I went ahead and took the, I don't need that either. client-side object model, and I went ahead and queried for everything out of the incidents list. Now, what's interesting about the incidents list, it's actually not part of the app itself. It's actually a host. It's actually in the host web. So I would have to set permissions permissions to it. And I do that using the app manifest, basically exactly how how Scott did it in his demo. Key things I'm doing here is I'm not using a list view control. What I decided to do is I wanted to use Razor, and using Razor to go ahead and output it. So I just went ahead and put the incidents into into the view bag. I also took the context token, which is the token that gets sent from the app itself, and the SharePoint host URL. I actually inserted those as well because I'm going to need to make sure on subsequent calls that those are made available to me. So on the add, what I simply do is I go ahead and I get the I grab the context token from the collection itself, and from the host web itself I get the host URL, and I use again the client side object model, and I go ahead and execute query and go ahead and execute it. Now there's some interesting things I also do here at the very bottom, and this is actually pretty important. Remember I said you kind of had to have that SP host URL and those things available to you? Well, the SP host URL, if you're going to be using like the SharePoint Chrome control, always has to be available in the query string itself. Otherwise, the Chrome control will spit a nasty error out at you. So what I'm using is I'm using the root values to actually force the SP host URL to be part of the URL that's sent back into the form itself. And I'll show you what that page looks like. So what happens is, first of all, I use the new temp data capabilities with MVC. So temp data is basically kind of a temporary holding ground to hold data throughout the entire call between page calls that you make. So if I click on a page and I make an action on a page, everything that's happening within the controller there is live. If you've ever done MVC before in the past and you've tried to say, hey, get request.query string, you'll notice on some subsequent controllers, if you're passing between controllers, the request query string is gone because it lost that context. That's by design, but it's something that you have to account for. So the temp data allows me to go ahead and pass those parameters in and keep it alive between the different subsequent controller calls. Here I go ahead and create the routes values, and I basically add the SP host URL, which is what's going to be the query string, the name of it, and the actual parameter itself will be the host URL, and I pass that in. So that's what the controller looks like. Let's take a look at what the view itself looks like. So first, because I'm using Razor, I'm using kind of the templating capabilities that Razor gives me. So you'll notice I have this home and I have a shared as well. So the shared actually provides common things that I could potentially use within my app. So if I go here and I have a layouts file that's there, but we'll first go ahead and start with the index itself. So with the index itself, you can see that I go ahead and I get the string back from the property bag, the SP host URL. I then go ahead and set up the routes value. So in this case, what I'm doing is I needed the routes value to be present for the other controller, because remember when in the last line, the create controller, I had to send a reference back to the index and actually produce the view again. So that's why I use the routes value here. But in this case, what I'm simply doing is I'm using the routes value to actually make it so that way the query string that will be created by creating the form element. So this html.beginForm basically just creates a form element on the page itself using Razor. Go ahead and it goes ahead and creates the page. I then pass the app context token into the body as a hidden. I could use view data or whatever it may be. It doesn't really matter. I just went ahead and created a hidden HTML element. And I create the structure of the table itself. I do a for each loop through all the incidents, and I go ahead and write them to the page itself. And if I have an error message, I will pass that error message along here that came from the controller. And at the very end here, I put the mform. This html.mform at the very bottom here. This goes ahead and specifies the ending of the form tag. So when I actually had ran that, we'll take a look at the source of the page itself. I'll go one more. And what we'll see is, first we'll see that app context token that's here, but right above here in this form action right here, you can see here's my home.create, and this is how it knows which of my controllers to actually call when I do my add method. But you'll see here's my SP host URL, and I did that by passing in the route values into there. So that way I can pass values in that I may need to have that to support the support my app. So I have there's the form tag there, and there's the ending form tag that should be on the bottom right here. But if you also notice, I also have all this script that came in, which is the SharePoint Chrome control. So the question is, where did all this script come from, and where did this Chrome control come from? Because I didn't specify it within Visual Studio. Because you can see here, I don't have any specification within the view of where this actually has come from. This is where the layouts comes from. So I can have a common layouts, which is pretty much similar to what we do in SharePoint by having what we do with our templates and whatnot, master pages. So here in the master pages, what I have is I go ahead and kind of define the actual body itself. I put the Chrome control, so it'll be there for each and every single page that I had within my actual app itself. Then I go ahead and say render body, and that actually renders the body, which is the index.cshtml file. And then I go ahead and insert jQuery, and then I go to render any scripts that I have defined using the bundling features of MVC. And then last, I have my script to handle my SharePoint Chrome control. So here is like a full MVC app. I was able to do it in SharePoint, and these are all the magnificent components for doing so. But there are a few more things I actually want to go ahead and show. First of all, let's take a look at the project itself. And what you'll notice is the SharePoint project. There's some things I want to highlight. First of all, right here in the lower right, you can see this is the site URL I have. But remember I said you could have SQL data script in a SQL database? You can define those scripts in that database that's actually going to get deployed for you. That'll be made part of this auto-hosted app. Now, I bet you're wondering, if you notice, every time I've created a new app, it's always come up as a web page app. How did I make this an MVC app in the first place? Well, let me show you. So if I go in, go to New, Project, I'm not going to create an app for SharePoint. Instead, what I'm going to go ahead and do is I'm going to create a new MVC app. And we're going to call it MVC 3, that's fine. And we'll just leave it at basic. Now, Visual Studio Tooling, what we did is we added this capability because we know that there's many templates out there. There's some maybe that are third-party that don't come with Visual Studio. So you might want to be able to leverage different types of different types of architectures for building web applications. What I can simply do is I right-click on the app itself, I select App for SharePoint Project, and I add that. Yes, I'm aware. And that message just comes up because the MVC app is running in 4.5, and now I've added the SharePoint component to that app. And it automatically references the project itself, MVC App 3, and it's all handled automatically for me. So now I can actually write an app for SharePoint using any type of web project template that is out there, whether it's produced by us from Microsoft, whether you purchase it from a third party, you find it on Coplex, you get it from NuGet, doesn't matter. You can create it as an app for SharePoint. With that, I'm going to hand it over here to my compadre, E-Ray, and the floor is now yours.
Great. Thanks, Keenan. So hopefully what you took away from Keenan's demo right here and maybe what you've been hearing, this is such an awkward stage, I feel like I can't walk around. But anyway, hopefully what you took away from Keenan's demo and what you've been hearing throughout the day is that, you know, we're providing a lot of flexibility for you with the various hosting options. So you basically have your choice of where do you want to go and host your code, and then also a lot of the technology that you choose. So, you know, you get to use the latest and greatest from MVC, you could use a LAMP stack, whatever you want. So I think that's kind of the key important part. So the next thing that we're going to talk a little bit about is, I think what most people want to hear about is our APIs. I know whenever I talk to a developer, they'll be like, ooh, what are the new APIs I get to go and use? So let's go and hop into that. So for the folks who've been working on SharePoint 2010, you might be familiar with some of the things that you see on this slide. So first off, that there's client.svc, And that's going to be something that we've extended now with REST. And then there's also our existing Seesaw. So the investment in REST was kind of a pretty big thing so that we wanted to do, that you can now directly call in. So any old client that can make an HTTP request and can authenticate to SharePoint can now go and actually interact with that SharePoint server. So we've dramatically reduced kind of the bar of actually going writing and doing stuff to a SharePoint server. So, you know, using a get, you can go and query items. Using a put, you can go and insert items. Post and merge will go and update anything, and delete obviously would delete stuff. The format that we went and exposed all of these REST endpoints is, or the protocol rather, is OData. So OData is something that's kind of an emerging standard in the industry, and something that's been backed by Microsoft as well as a couple of other companies. So for example, I think like Netflix goes and the Azure Data Services and the Data Marketplace all expose their data via OData. And so that provides a standard format in which you can go and interact with that with the information from SharePoint, and it also provides a bunch of kind of common functions and methods. And I'll be showing that a little bit in my demo later. The next thing that we did was that we expanded the surface of our client-side object model. So for folks who were using the client object model in 2010, you'll probably have noticed that it was mostly related to things like lists and documents, sites, kind of the core stuff that you would use in Foundation. When I went and talked to a lot of folks while we were planning this release, everyone was like, well, my business does a lot of content management. I need to go and access things like the taxonomy service. Or, you know, I do a lot of search integration, so I want to be able to access that set of APIs via the Seesaw. And so that's basically we listened, and here's some of the new expanded scope of our client object model. So you'll see that it now actually touches that whole span of services that are available in SharePoint. So search, you don't have to call search.asmx anymore. You can now call the CSOM or use the REST APIs there. Social is another one that I'm actually, you know, you've been hearing the word social probably a ton just today. You know, social is great too. You can go and access things like the news feed. You can get user profiles and access them via CSOM, via REST, and so on. I mean, I'll just kind of show what some of that stuff looks like. Taxonomy for all folks who work in the content management space, workflow, analytics, sharing, and much, much more. So, you know, I think we really kind of pushed on, we want to make sure that you have maximum coverage of the APIs to go and write the apps that you do, and also to really embrace this sort of distributed pattern of making calls externally. Just to summarize some of those changes a little bit, because I think some people might have questions about this, is that we haven't really changed the SKU differentiation about what capabilities are available where. It's still that in Foundation, you're mostly looking at kind of that core set of data, sites, you know, web manipulation, document manipulation. Whereas on the server side, within SharePoint server, that's where you go and still have all your other services like taxonomy, profiles, publishing. But what we did do is, as I noted, we added the REST support across the board, both in Foundation and in server. And then we also added that whole CSOM approach. So now, using that sort of same client-side object model pattern that you saw within the Foundation case, you can now use against SharePoint server. For some of the folks who were here a couple years ago, you may remember, I think it was Mike Amerlon, one of my old coworkers, he came out on stage and made a point of like stating, CSOM is the API surface that we're going to continue to invest in for the years to come. And I really just wanted to reiterate that. You know, we started that off in the 2010 timeframe, and now we're continuing to invest in it and making sure that that's a consistent API that everyone can go and use. For people who've been doing SharePoint since, you know, early on, like early 2000s, you might be like, well, you had the old RPC calls, you had all your SOAP services. You know, this is the new API set that we're going to continue to go with, and this is our recommended path going forward. So with that, this is what the landscape of our remote APIs looked like in 2013. So we had the stuff that we built out started off in the 2010 timeframe with the JavaScript library, Silverlight libraries, .NET, so on, and all of that talk in a client SVC, and then now direct access via REST. And so, you know, whatever your client stack is, you should have an API that's available for you to use. Okay. So why did we go with REST, some of you might be wondering. The biggest thing that we've just seen is that there's a ton of industry momentum here. When we went and did and talked to folks in the crowd and also just to get the general pulse of the developer community, both kind of within Microsoft platforms and just other platforms at large, we kept on hearing this sort of a trend towards, hey, we like this web technology stuff, and everyone's really exposing their services via REST. And so just to kind of enable, and we wanted to make sure that our developer community could use that same set of patterns and use the same knowledge that they've acquired to go and leverage this API set. Contrasting that a little bit to how SOAP used to be, like SOAP web services are totally fine, but the feedback that we were getting was just that, it's a little bit hard for me to always kind of nail just the message syntax and kind of learn that new API surface to go and prop up my own services. And so, we think that the REST API that we have helps address some of those issues. As we noted, it's aligned really well to web technologies. So if we have web developers in the audience, hopefully this is making you happy that you can go and be really productive with JavaScript and jQuery. You can return the data in both JSON and Atom formats, so you have a lot of flexibility there. And you see that bullet point about testing in the browser. Well, I'm going to go and show kind of just how easy it is just to explore that API surface and kind of go and see the data that you're getting back. The last little bit I'll call out here is that, because the way REST works and the way the protocols work is that every single query or every single property and object or method all has a unique URL surface. And so as a result of that, you can also get some performance gains from caching all those results. So SharePoint has a long history of doing a really great job with beautiful URLs. Good, at least someone got that joke. Obviously, we did a good job. We focused a bunch on our URLs and what they look like this time around, just in simple cases like document sharing and sending links. But the same was true for our API surface. So this is actually what the URLs will look like, as opposed to /vti/bin/client.svc. Something that I've been saying for years and years and years now, you can just get rid of all that and just go very simply _API. thanks. I sometimes comment, it's been like 16 years since we acquired FrontPage and from Vermeer Technologies Incorporated, so it's kind of nice to finally be able to go and get those last little vestiges out of our URL space. Okay, so the last little bit. Here are just a couple of quick examples. I'm not going to go into them here in detail because I'll be showing that hopefully live if the networks are behaving correctly. But much like what you've gotten used to if you've been using things like the CSOM and so on, is that our object structure is pretty much like the containment hierarchy of SharePoint. So you have webs that contain lists, that contain items, and so on. And so what I'm going to be showing in the demo is kind of how similar, whether you're using the JavaScript object model, the .NET object model, or the REST API, that they all look very, very similar. And so for folks who have experience with that, you can leverage that same knowledge in the REST case. So let me hop on over to a demo. Okay, so what you're looking at is a dev site that we've all been using to demo. I'm just going to go and quickly launch an app that is actually available as a code sample, and I want to give a shout out to our UA team. I think I saw some folks in the back. They've been working super hard to provide tons and tons of code samples, and so if folks haven't looked at the code samples yet, I highly recommend going to check those out. You can go and learn and kind of play with a lot of these sorts of things, and I think a lot of the people who are demoing are borrowing snippets from that pool of demos. So I see people taking pictures of chunks of code, so go download the
except the MVC one. That one's unique. That's it.
So I have one unique one here too.
Oh, sweet.
But okay. So what you're seeing here is a basic app that allows you to show common types of tasks that you do, and then I'll show up both the code from the JavaScript perspective, and then next I'll go and show how you would go and make the same types of calls using the REST APIs. So the first one is really simple. I'll just show here. Okay, I'm just going to go and get the properties of the web. And so if you're familiar with our JavaScript OM, it's pretty straightforward that you go and load up your context. Oops. You load up your context. You go and say, actually, that looks a little small. Let me go make that bigger. Okay. You load up your context. You ask for the web. You load it all up. And then you're able to go and fetch those properties. So let me go and show you how you would do this in the REST case. So what I'm going to go and do first, just grab the URL that I need. And then go _API. _API web, because I claimed it was that simple. Just tack on _API and the object you want, hit enter, and boom. Now you go and have, via the REST, the entire representation of that web object. And so you can go and see all the various properties that are associated, like the title of this particular web, basic tasks, various IDs. So it's pretty easy to go and explore, and I'll show you some of the other types of common methods that you would use within the REST API. So I can go and select specific properties. So let's say if I wanted to go here. Like, again, in the CSOM case, I can go and ask for specific things, like only loading specific properties. You can do the same thing. Oops, let me move that over here. You can do the same thing with the REST API. So this is something that's part of the OData protocol. There's a command called select. So you just go add the query string parameter, see the $ select, and I'm going to go and ask for the title and the ID. And so all there on the URL, I'll go enter. And now I just return only the title of that, sorry, the title and the ID of the web. And so, again, it's really easy just to go and explore and get any of the information that you need. So as I noted, it follows the basic containment hierarchy as the REST of SharePoint. So does anyone have an idea how I might go and see the lists in this site? I maybe type lists, and let's see if that works. And now I can go and see all the lists that are in my site. And so in this particular site, I have 4. And this is all getting returned in that Atom format. So just to show you a little bit, this is a lot of information about a list. And I can go and apply that same sort of select mechanism to show less information. So I'll select the titles and IDs of those lists, hit enter. And now I just see that I have an announcements list, a composed looks list, which was our name for themes, the master page gallery, and the shared documents list. And just showing that same sort of pattern back over here, click view code, scroll down. And then I can go and just say that via the JavaScript OM, you can go and do that same sort of thing by making that, getting the web, calling get lists, which is essentially the equivalent of slash lists, excuse me. And then after that, go and rendering that how you please.
No, I saw that the REST is returning XML. Well, can it return JSON?
Yes, it can. It can return JSON. Thanks for asking.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, and so that basically you have a ton of flexibility over the format that you prefer. You know, some folks are more comfortable with JSON, and sometimes it's even more readily usable by some of the common libraries that you see out there.
I got one more question. I saw you're doing a select statement there. Is that based off of any common protocol or?
Yeah, and so you could select, and I'll show you one more around filtering that are all these common methods that you see in OData. And so that's all part of that standard. So if you're familiar with other sources of data that expose themselves via OData, you can just go and leverage that same knowledge over here. Okay. So let me just go and quickly show how to go and just get the actual items of a list, and then we'll kind of wrap up this portion of the demo. Oops. So much like before, you can go and get all the lists. You have some more method-looking things that are like this, and you can go and say get a list, a specific title. You can also go by ID and get the information about a specific list. I'll click enter, and now I'm just grabbing information about the announcements list and all the metadata. To go and get the items, it's just typing in items. And then you'll see that this particular announcements list has 5 items in it, all of them of some flavor of sample text. And once again like before, I can continue to go and use those common commands that you see. So I can go and grab, this is an announcements list, so as a title and a body field, I'll go grab those two fields. And now I have the title and the body field. At this point, I'd like to jump back and show one other chunk of code on the JavaScript side, because let me ask a question. How many people know Camel Query? Wow, this is actually more people
that
know
it. That's impressed. I'm impressed.
So I sometimes joke that like me and five or six other people are the only people in our building at Microsoft who can actually just write it out by hand without a tool, but it looks like there's plenty of people. I apologize for making you all learn that. So hopefully...
We can admit mistakes, you know, it's good.
So, you know, if you're using our continuing to use some of our client object models, that knowledge that you've accrued over the years is still super valuable. But, you know, as opposed to doing the view field, select where equals so on that you did, it's kind of nice to also just be able to go and say select title and body and get that same information. And I'll show the where statement now also that is instead called a filter. So as opposed to going, you know, where view field, or actually where equals view fields title contains and so on, you can now go and just say filter starts with title, and I'll say lorem ipsum 1 just to get the first item. I'll click at the end, say enter, and now you just have that first item. So hopefully this provided a really kind of an overview of just what that REST API does. It's allowing you to leverage a lot of that same knowledge that you have of SharePoint around what the containment hierarchy, what the object structure looks like, but a pretty easy way just to go and get all of that information. You know, the same is basically true of this. I'm showing you reads in the browser, updates and all that stuff works pretty much the same, except for you're using a post, you know, as opposed to like a get. So the one last thing I'll show is that, you know, I claim that we've actually exposed REST for all of our other, you know, SharePoint server services. So I also said my favorite one is the feed. So let me go and show you a news feed over here. And then let me say, and I'm going to go a little bit, I'm a little bit scared just because of the network, but let's give it a shot and just say, I'm demoing right now. And I'll post this. And oh, that happened to go pretty quickly. So now that's posted over here. And the way that the feed or the social API works is very similar. Before I was always hanging off of, you know, my particular web underscore API, and I go web, lists and so on. All of the other APIs that we have a pretty similar calling pattern. It'll be like underscore slash taxonomy underscore slash social in this case. And so right here I can go and say check out you know, information about me in my site. And so this is some of the basic info that I have from like the profile store. And I can also go and check out the news feed for me. And I'll click enter over here. And if everything worked out correctly, you should see kind of the data items of I am demoing right now. And so that way you can kind of just see it's not just for all the list data that you have, but for all of the services that you have in a SharePoint server.
Yeah. You know, Ray, this is all really great, but, you know, SharePoint has a lot of things that goes on inside of it, right? So you have like, you know, you add a list item, you add a new document library, and we have this thing called event receivers in the past. But with this new app model where I can't actually push code into my SharePoint site, is it possible to do the same kinds of things?
Wow, Keenan, I'm glad you asked that question too.
I saw a lot of people actually, because I'm monitoring the Twitter, and some people were actually mentioning that. They're like, we haven't seen anything about event receivers. Well, here you go.
Yeah, Keenan's awesome. I love Keenan. Great. So next we're going to go and cover remote event receivers. As you may imagine, it's kind of like an event receiver, but it calls to something remotely. So let me go and cover what this is all about. So who here uses event receivers regularly? Good, so we have a lot of people. So first, so you know, as Keenan noted, when we start to look at more of this distributed pattern where you have to go and have code hosted, you know, off box, we needed to make sure that you can actually still go and make that call and actually go and access that service. And then secondly, just even from the feedback, like how many of the folks who have been doing remote event who've been doing event receivers ever wanted to make a call off box to do some notification to some other system or things like that? Some people, maybe? Okay. Something that I've heard quite a bit as well. So those were the two kind of major pieces of motivation that we had. So we support the notion of a remote event receiver, which is basically an event receiver that, as opposed to calling code that would be hosted in, like, say, the sandbox or in full trust, can call out to a web service. It can fire at, you know, the list item scope, the list scope, the web scope, and then as well as on the app scope, on the scope of an app. I'm going to just to kind of emphasize why that last one is important. So the common types of app events that you have are things like the app is in the process of installing, the app is uninstalling. So hopefully you've kind of picked up that we care a lot about this whole life cycle of getting an app in and out of your system cleanly and kind of, you know, just having fitting in like a natural part of SharePoint. So what the app install and uninstall events lets you do is actually go and make a call out to a remote event receiver there as well. And so, for example, if you have a cloud host or a provider hosted app, let's say on your own server, when someone installs an app, there's a lot of times that you want to go do something like setup, right? You want to go and say, like, add some provision, some information in your own service. And that's what that capability is all about. So on app installation, you can go and call out to your provider hosted service and then go and run additional logic, do any sort of user setup, user provisioning, anything that you might want to do. And then once that's all done, SharePoint will go and finish up the install. We have the uninstall event, so we please ask that if you go do a bunch of stuff, please clean up after yourself too. So that's why they're both there. We support synchronous and async events. And kind of just to cover that, the stuff on the right-hand side of the slide, this is all about kind of triggering notifications. This isn't intended to be a solution for syncing. So, you know, don't really look at this for, you know, trying to keep two sources of data completely kind of in sync all the time. It's much more about like, hey, an event has happened in SharePoint. I want to trigger some logic over there. So I think a good example is like, I've uploaded a document to a document library. I want to go and translate, I want to go send that out to a translation service, get the contents translated and go back. Those sorts of activities are much more the types of things that we're looking at. Okay? And then lastly, you know, there isn't guaranteed delivery, but I think the most common thing I've been seeing people do here is to use the Azure Message Bus just as a way to go and make sure that you can and improve that the consistency of delivery there. Oops, I clicked on the wrong thing. All right. So there's two ways to go and register your remote event receivers. This is similar with normal event receivers. There's the declarative way, which you see on the left-hand side of just, you know, what's your event receiver, what event is it listening to, and what order it shows up, or rather, what order does it get fired. And then you'll notice that there is the service that it actually calls. And that's kind of the main difference, as opposed to going and referencing an assembly that you would see normally. The second way you can also do it is to do so via code. And the most common case that we see this get used is when you go and want to register an event to a parent web. As you've noticed, if you kind of got gathered from the architecture, you have your parent or your host web, and then you often will have an app web. And so, you know, if you can definitely go and have a bunch of events running in your app web, but there's a common scenario is like, hey, I have a document library in my host web that everyone uses. So how can I go in and trigger events off of that? Well, you can certainly do that with the app model. And so just basically on your install event, the app install event, you would go and say, write some code to go and register an event on that parent web. And then that way you can go and have events or getting listened to on that parent as well. So that way you get a lot of that same sort of flexibility that you'd expect kind of from the previous iterations of event receivers. So I'm going to go and show two demos. One of these demos is the place that I open up an Office document, so I apologize. I should just apologize to Rolando later for making fun. But okay, so the first demo I'm going to go and show is a pretty simple one around documents. And I'll show you the rough demo, and then I'll show you the code of kind of how it works. So let me go back to my dev site. Okay, so I'm going to go and launch my app, the document template event receiver demo.
Oh, sorry. Yep, got it.
Thank you.
Just slap us around, it's okay.
Yeah. So all you missed was I navigated. I went from here to here. Okay, so what this simple demo does is that I've deployed an app. This is sitting in its app web, and then I have a document library that I've added to that app web. And I've created an event receiver that's going to go and check that whenever I go and either create a document or update a document, it'll go and fire off to a service and see, hey, did I fill out all the right metadata that I want to? And if so, specify that it's validated. So just to show you, you know, for a document that's already been there, I have a title and a subject field. And then if I go and view the properties here, you'll see that it's last validated at this such and such a date. Okay. So if I go back to my document library, I'm going to go and say, create a new document. I've actually kind of started creating a new document just because the network was a little bit slow, but it's from that same document library, and let me open that up. So this is the document I created from that template, and so you'll notice that there's a title field, a subject field that are all bound to the properties on that list, and then there's this last validated on field. So I'm just going to say, this is a live demo, and I hope the gremlins don't get me. Okay. And so you'll see that I have these, I filled out these two pieces of information, and I'm just going to go and save it up to my site. So I'll hit save, save it to no internet connection. That looks scary, but I will try anyway. Okay. This is a live demo, so let's kind of bear with it as it's trying to save. Let's see. Well, I'll wait and let that kind of go, and in the meantime, I will talk about the code that's here. Okay. So what you're looking at is just another kind of, whenever you go and create a new project in Visual Studio, you have the ability to go and specify both the kind of the app portion of that project as well as the service portion of that project. And in this particular instance, the way I built out this app was I kind of just started with a blank site, or rather a blank app, added a document library, and I'll be showing a little bit more about that actual experience in my next part of my demo. And then the next thing is, and I've registered those event receivers for the item adding, and you'll notice that it calls out to remote event receiver one service. And so down here, when I went and added that, it automatically created this service that goes and calls that remote event receiver can call. So let me just show you the code there. Basically, this is pretty much just a pretty simple template that, you know, Visual Studio gives you everything but the highlighted parts, basically. And then what I'm doing here is that all the event receivers have properties that are available. And so what I'm just going to do is what the code here is doing is looking for what are the properties and if any of them contain the subject field. And then I'll check. If the subject field isn't empty, then I can go and say, yep, I validated it. That's all good. If it is empty, then you know I won't make that change. And so because of the network things, we're not going to hit deploy. But let's go back to that site and let's see if that all worked correctly. So it looks like this has gotten saved. I'm going to hit refresh here. And so you now see that there's the second document that I have over there. And if I look at the view properties as well here, you'll hopefully see that the date has been validated. Yep. So I'll close over here. And now that you have the date, and it says that, yep, it ran that code. And so, you know, much like Keenan was showing in the various hosting options cases, you know, I'm deploying this code over using the auto-hosted pattern. So this is running over on Azure, and then that app or SharePoint's going to call out to that service, and it's able to go and make the changes and call back in. So that's kind of a simple demo. Let me go and now show you a slightly fancier demo. Okay, let me just make sure let me sign in real quick. Okay. So what this next demo is, I'll build it out a little bit, but what we're going to go and see is one of the advantages of hosting your code out on some separate service is that, you know, you can use that separate service as kind of a broker of intelligence or a way to go and push notifications across things. So a common pattern that we see is, you know, I'll have my own service. It's going to be talking to SharePoint, but it might also be talking to, you know, other things. Like it could be serve as an endpoint for devices and pushing things to devices, or it could be talking to other services, like, you know, anything consumer or whatever you might have in the organization. So what I'm going to show now is a demo of how you could go and use a remote event receiver and trigger a notification in Windows 8. So to build out that sort of a site, and I'll build it out about halfway, and then I'll switch to kind of the completed code, is that basically you go and create a new project within Visual Studio, a new app for SharePoint, and I'll say SharePoint Demo Live. Click OK. And you'll see that you have the same kind of options around, you know, what's your target site, and I want to go and make it an auto-hosted one, and I'll click Finish. And while this is happening, you know, this is going to creating the actual content for the SharePoint site, and it's also going and creating that web project and associating everything with it. And so now I have that simple site with my SharePoint app as well as the actual live site too. The next thing I'm going to do is go and add a simple announcements list. So what I want to do is anytime anyone's added announcements to my site, it's going to go and trigger a notification to Windows 8. So I can go and do that by just saying adding a simple new item. And you know what you should gather from this is that much like I added a document library, you can go and add any list and use Visual Studio's nice list tools. So I'll just say announcements. Okay. So I'm going to pick the announcements template. Great. Go finish. And at this point, it's talking to the server, grabbing all the right schema, and then adding that into my project. And so after a few more seconds, it'll go and add that in. And the next thing that I'll do after that is go and add the event receiver. And you'll see how Visual Studio is super helpful in actually wiring everything up for you. So, you know, you saw that there's stuff in the app around the registration of it. There's also the service itself that lived in the web. And so Visual Studio goes and takes care of all of that stuff for you and just wires it all up. And so once this is done adding, I'll show you that piece. Okay, great. So I've added that list. You can see that's just a normal announcements list. Let me go and add an event receiver now. So once again, add a new item, a remote event receiver with the cool lightning bolt. And I'll click add. And I can go and pick, and it's kind of smart about picking that announcements list that I added. So I can go and say, when an item is added or updated, click finish. And at that point, I get brought to, you know, that same that service that was added automatically into my web over here, as well as it did all the registration that you need up here. So it automatically did that registration. So this is at the point I'll switch to, you see that there's this basic template for how you go and write the code and, for your event receiver. Let me go and switch to one that's already done. Oops. So this is basically that starting chunk of that code that you have. And I'll talk about the next little pieces that I've done here. So this is basically this little snippet, and I will make it bigger. This little snippet is basically the only thing that I really had to, or actually not even me, it's a guy on my team named Rob who's doing a presentation on tomorrow and Thursday, you should go check out, went and wrote out. So the way the notifications work in Windows is that you can go and specify a channel on a Windows app that's basically like a URL that you go and call into, and then there's a specific format for those toast things. So this is that actual format. And so all I'm doing is saying I'm going to grab the title and the body from that particular item. I'm going to go and create kind of that little template of toast, which puts the title and the body in there. I'm going to call out to that channel URL, and then there's some authentication stuff here. Next below, there is a big chunk of code that I just copied over from MSDN, and there's literally just an example of, I don't know where that window went. Okay. There is an example on MSDN for how to go and post things to a feed in Windows 8. So I literally just copied this over, put it in the project, and that's about it. So let me go and show what this all looks like now that I'm done and run. So I would click F5, it would deploy the service out to Azure, and then I'd get an app web. So here's that app running in which I have that simple announcements list that I've added, and I can go and create a new announcement. So what's supposed to happen is every time I create a new announcement, this is happening now. Hope it works. And click Save. And if everything is working, I should get a notification shortly. And let me try one more just to double check. Okay, so that looks like it's not actually working, unfortunately. Let me just restart this app and make sure nothing. Okay. Okay, let's see. Save and. Okay, well, unfortunately, that last bit doesn't seem to be working. It was working previously. But what you would see is that there would be a little toast that pops up and kind of demonstrating that notion of you have a service that's running out on an external server, and then it can go and call out and then go and actually post out to other devices and so on.
Must be Dreamweaver.
Must be, yeah, the Dreamweaver thing. So, you know, hopefully I can get this thing working again later on, and maybe I'll show it in a different session. So. Okay, and so with that, that was the demos that I wanted to show. And so hopefully you got to see a little taste of what remote event receivers can do for you as far as, you know, providing a simple mechanism to go and execute code, off-box call services, all based off of events in SharePoint.
All right, well, we're going to be wrapping this up. As we mentioned before, if you have any interest in building apps, especially with all the great things you saw, we started off in the beginning of the morning for our sessions. We kind of laid down the foundation of what apps are all about. And then we kind of got deeper, a little bit further and further and further into the depths and complexities of apps until we got to the point where we are right now, where you can pretty much do almost everything you did in a full trust solution, probably about 90, 95% of it, with this new app model. And that includes both for app for Office as well as app for SharePoint. With that, if you have any interest, we have cards up here. We might be having someone pass them out. Pick some up, fill them out, or you can get some possibly at the doors as well as you head on out. Please fill out to your evaluations at MySBC, and it has been my pleasure to introduce to you this new app model today at SharePoint Conference, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. I look forward to seeing you around. Again, thank you and have an